That's it.
Okay. Call this work session for the Newport Planning Commission to order. First item is call to order. Roll call. Bill Brannigan?
Here.
Bob Berman is here. Jim Hanselman? Gary East?
Here.
Braulio Escobar? John Updike?
Here.
Robert Baer?
Here.
Dustin? Uh-oh.
He's excused.
Huh?
He's excused.
Oh, okay. All right. Moving right along, new business. City Center Revitalization Plan Updates. Derek?
Yes, thank you. Derek Tokos, Community Development Director. Before we get started and going through the work session materials, I did want to just mention that we are kind of limping along for tonight's meeting. The city's internet and servers are all down, have been for a few hours now. Our IT folks are working on it, and so what we've come up with is a workaround for this meeting where we're going through a phone hotspot to do the Zoom access, and then we're recording it more conventional style. So we'll have a digital audio file, but we will not have a video for this meeting. It's just is what it is. I do have the materials available for planning commissioners to take a look at for the work session. I lost access to the server before I could grab information for the regular meeting, but I trust everybody's reviewed those and all of the attachments, so we probably don't need to put anything on the big screen for the regular meeting when we get to that point. So with that said, the City Center Revitalization Plan update, I wanted to share with you a few things. First, the public engagement summary. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the proposed comprehensive plan and development code changes. They're very graphic oriented. It's from UrbsWorks. It's a form-based code. That's the approach that's being recommended here. And then a little bit on the schedule. This is really more about just orientation to UrbsWorks materials, so that, and any questions you have, I'm happy to take those. And either if I can't respond to them, get a response before your next work session where you'll really have a chance to dig in on these issues, and we'll have actually Jim Hankey with David Evans and Associates going to be at your next work session. On these two pieces, the summary from public event number two and the form-based code, those same materials are going to be presented to the Citizen Advisory Committee, the Project Citizen Advisory Committee, who will be meeting for its sixth and final time on the 16th of this month, so just in a few days. So first, just want to the summary. I trust you guys all had a chance. And the focus for public event two again was about here are the project goals. Public event one, we heard that most folks agreed with those goals in terms of the objectives of revitalizing the city center area, creating more walkable environment in the city center area, getting additional housing options in the city center area. So the focus of public event two was, well, how well does what we put together align with those project goals? We had both in-person engagement and we had an online survey. I trust you had an opportunity to participate in the survey if you wanted to, or in the in-person activities. For in-person, we had about 80 people attend at the open house, which was held here in the City Council Chambers. And then we had a separate Spanish event, which had over 40 people. 34 hard copy surveys were filled out in English, 39 in Spanish. Advertise this, there were a number of things that were done, which are summarized in the report in terms of social media platforms and whatnot, but we also did the postcard route, kind of a traditional carrier route drop, which dropped over 7,800 postcards to folks in Newport and around Newport within that carrier route distribution. For online, we had 52 surveys in English, one in Spanish, and then again, I noted the our communications specialist, John Fuller, he push this out to conventional media and then through social media like Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, Nextdoor. They're all listed here. I think you'll note if you went through here, the nature of the engagement was a little bit different. The feedback was a little bit different. It's probably the better way to say it. Between the Spanish-speaking event and the English-speaking in-person engagement. What we generally found across all platforms was that there was support that the direction we're going is consistent with the project goals. English-speaking, that was not as strong as the Spanish-language-speaking folks in terms of the survey responses. Just take a moment to acknowledge that council member Jim Hanselman's joined us. The
got promoted to the council.
Commission member. That would have been a good promotion. So summary of where the meetings were held. I thought from my perspective, I thought some of the most valuable feedback through this came where you got responses on some of the different form-based code options, which is being used by HerbsWorks to kind of customize the design. So anywhere from community preferences to services for businesses being alley-driven, you know, so providing places for loading and things of that nature via alleys, for commercial activities, a preference for mixed-use development on housing where it's residential over first-floor commercial. You saw a preference for the design standards in areas where we have retail requiring mandatory awnings with redevelopment to provide some weather protection. That was strong support for that. And the same with ped-scale signage. You saw that in there as well, where, you know, versus roof-mounted. So try to keep that signage down closer to more of a pedestrian orientation. Those are the kind of things that can be rolled into the actual form-based code, and HerbsWorks has that information and is taking that tact. Couplet was a major focal point, as it has been in terms of the transportation solution all the way through here. There's a core group of folks that do not like it and will not like it. Many of those live off of 9th in residential areas just south of where the couplet would come in. And you have folks who believe that that's a very expensive option and don't believe that that's a good use of public money, and they would prefer to just see US 101 stay the way it is and the transportation pattern stay the way it is. But when it comes to, you know, does this solution again meet the project objectives, we had a majority of the feedback saying yes. In the Spanish language forums, strong support for the direction it's going. There's also some really good information in here about the what our focus should be in terms of assisting businesses moving forward. You know, there's significant concern about displacement. Once they're put in place, you know, that we need to take care to make sure we're not displacing existing businesses, strong support for business assistance, for facade improvements. You saw support in there for, in terms of when any kind of streetscape improvements are rolled out, wanting to make sure trash management is handled effectively. Benches had support. Public art had support, probably the lowest percentage of the bunch. Lighting was important. Parking, as ever, is always important. You had some summary in here about responses or feedback from businesses within the district proper, you know, and 101, you know, wanting to make sure how is this going to affect and ideally improve the extent to which we have people exposed to our storefronts and feeling comfortable come in and out of our storefronts. So access to customers, major focus point of businesses, as you would expect. Let me see.
Here's an off-the-wall question. Do we have any idea how many during the summer percentage-wise, of people just pass through Newport, either going south or going north, and thus we're going to miss half of the opportunities that we're talking about if we do a couple. But, you know, I'm not talking about local traffic. You go into town, you come back. But of the tourist people, I know if they stop here, they're probably going to end up being exposed to both. But is there a lot of just straight-through traffic?
I'd have to pull a, I could talk to ODOT about what I can bring forward for you so you have a better sense of that. We have traffic counts. What I'm not as certain about is what's ODOT's projection about how much of that is just straight on pass through Newport versus people that are stopping in Newport, or Newport is their destination.
It's not that important. I was just curious because it struck me that the business owners conceivably could claim they're losing half their exposure for people driving through town, which is true.
So yeah, it's a mixed bag. If you're on 9th Street and you have commercial property, you're going to get a whole lot more exposure.
Well, yeah.
You know, so we have a number of commercial properties there that would benefit from the additional exposure. Yeah, I think you'll have a little bit of that. There's always the questions, too, about navigating around and things like that. One thing that was interesting, too, was that I think there was most of the feedback you had in here was into the question of whether or not there should be a common theme between 101 and 20. It was no. They're distinct enough, different, that we shouldn't be looking to try to have a common design theme or wayfinding or district identity. And there's still some of those discussions will need to be had moving forward as to, you know, whether or not the DECO district is done or whether or not there's still desire amongst business owners to kind of hitch the city center area to that kind of theme. That's not going to get sorted out with this project, but clear feedback was, hey, 20 is different than 101, and we don't need to try to make them look the same.
There seemed to be some confusion. I don't know if you picked up on whether First Street was going to be involved at all.
On 20?
Yeah. And it was, obviously, that's the bicycle route, but yep. Some people got the impression that the cars were going over.
Nope.
Well, I know
it was.
Not,
no, I hear you. That was evaluated with the transportation system plan, whether or not couplet for 20 made sense, but it was dropped.
Is that a problem with our communications that people still think that traffic might get rerouted onto First Street?
I don't know that's a problem about communications. I think every time we have somebody who's taking the time out of, you know, their day to come in and engage with us, it's an opportunity for us to clarify. It's hard for us to know the last time some individuals engaged on a project. Maybe they heard about it back when the TSP was being developed and moved on, did different things, and were re-engaging. That's a real hard one, but as people engage, that's where our true opportunity is to convey, you know, accurate information at that time. A lot of support for allowing a range of home types. We touched on the alleys as delivery access and the ped scale signage. Variety in housing types and the preference for residential over first floor business office is what that summary looks like. Here. You know, the online tracked more or less in general themes consistent with the in-person as well. I think we pretty much covered the district aesthetics, small business support. What I would encourage you to, as we move through, there's your awning protection right there. As we move ahead and we tackle code changes, I think this is an important document to go back to and kind of reflect on. I'll try to make sure as we go through to pull it in to my staff summaries where changes were made specifically to be responsive to feedback like this in terms of how we structure a code moving forward. Or if we can't structure it for some reason in a way that's responsive, there's a clear explanation as to why that's the case. But most of these things are things that we should be able to address to some degree. For example, alleys is delivery access. There are some geographic limitations on where we could pull that off or not. But certainly with respect to pedscale signage and trying to break up blocks, we can put in place policies that get at that. As would be expected, farmers market support for it. The plan shows that it can be accommodated in its current location. It doesn't require that the farmers market stay there. So if at some point there's an opportunity for the market to move and it makes sense and there's support amongst the community that makes sense and the market's on board with it, that's fine. But the plan certainly shows that they can stay and continue to have a farmer's market at their current location once the improvements are in. As we know, that's going to, and we conveyed to folks, the streetscape improvements are going to take time. But once they're in, that space will still be usable for that purpose.
And those improvements, are they designed to facilitate a year-round farmer's market or really just to improve on the existing schedule?
Well, the concepts that are in the plan really call for covered parking to be installed, which would be installed once the streetscape improvements are in. That's weather protection to a degree. Now, there could be some additional work on that to see if there are other solutions that might provide a better space, but right now that's about what you can do with a parking lot that still has to be in it available for that purpose, you know, when you're not using it for a market. So you get a degree of weather protection, not perfect, but a lot better than what they have right now. Again, increased housing options, lots of feedback on that, lots of feedback in support of green spaces, legitimate concerns about availability of government funding, difference here, from the Peninsula plan, which was done previously back in the late 80s, I believe, maybe early 90s, but late 80s, we've got an urban renewal district that was put in place to provide the local match. So we are able to bring funding to the table. We're able to advance concepts in a design far enough that we're more competitive for grant funds. The trick is going to be when are state and federal dollars going to be available for that purpose. They may not be available for a couple years, but, over the many years I've been doing this work, it comes down incrementally from the federal level. So we can expect that there will be opportunities in the future, and we want to position ourselves for that. And then I'm not going to go through all the appendices. The report included appendices which have, tabular data, charts, individual comments, all summarized line by line. If you want to take a look at those, you're welcome to. If you have any other questions on this, I'll move to the Urbs Works piece, because that's probably going to take a little more time. Good.
Why did you break down the responses between Spanish and non-Spanish speaking? What was the decision that you had in doing that? And if you're going to start breaking down the demographics, did you break it down in terms of a person's sex, male and female, break it down on economic status, retired, working, student, and things like that. Just wondering why there's a special category.
Well, one of the objectives of this process and others moving forward for the city, and one that the state supports and promotes, is trying to reach populations within the community that don't generally engage through your traditional methods. We know demographically we have a large Spanish-speaking population relative to our overall population for a community of our size. So the objective was to try to get that group better engaged in this, by actually having specific outreach to that group as part of this process. That's why there was a specific in-person event that was set up, you know, that was Spanish language focused. And it had a pretty good draw. We did the same with public event one, where we had the a Spanish language forum on the Friday after the principal event, the in-person event. Now, even at the in-person events, I mean, we advertise in both languages, online, both languages. But you saw online, we had one Spanish language response. We're finding, our staff is finding, that there are different approaches that we need to take to engage that part of our community. And Gia was the principal person there who was really taking the lead on that and was able to bring a number of folks who wouldn't have otherwise probably engaged in this process into it.
What was the thought process you went into in differentiating the Spanish language responses versus the English language responses? Wouldn't the responses be all mixed into the same?
Well, if
I don't
you probably,
see them as being that different.
They were just different events.
I think all in together.
Yeah, I think GLA just summarized each distinct event that was held. The online, I don't think they broke out the single Spanish language response any different from the rest of the online responses. All of the online was summarized as one activity, if you want to think of it that way. Then you had the English, the in-person one we held, which was your English-speaking one, as two. And then there was a separate forum for Spanish language, which was the third one. So it's just each distinct forum where the public had an opportunity to engage and provide feedback.
And you've broken down. I mean, I'm not trying to beat this horse to death.
Yeah.
But you've broken it down. I'm going to look at page 7 and page 8 and 9 into Anglo-speaking and Spanish-speaking. Why couldn't they just be combined?
They could. There were some. It was informative, and I think that's why JLA broke it out. That JLA chose to break that away, the public involvement consultant we have on the team. And I think they did because they did notice just differences in terms of the percent, you know, where the population was falling on some of these issues, and that those differences were worth pointing out.
I appreciate breaking them, separating them, being Caucasian, not having a lot of contact with the Hispanic community. It's hard for me to gauge or judge or know what that community is thinking by them identifying what Hispanic individuals are thinking about our town does a couple of things. One, it allows me to better grasp how they view our city. They are integral to our city. They are so important to this city, and they need to have a say. I also think that breaking it out is a strong signal to the Hispanic community that, hey, we are interested in what you have to say, and we are pulling it out because we want to be responding to it directly. We don't want you to think that you're just being lopped in with a bunch of Caucasian folks and we're going with their ideas because we can't see your Hispanic ideas. So I'm most appreciative of this. It's one of the, it doesn't become in my mind at all a racist issue. For me, it's a knowledge-based issue. If you want to make it a racist issue, that's more about what you are as a person. I'm interested in knowing what those Hispanic people are thinking about the community that they live in and that they contribute to. So I'm really glad that they broke them out. I think that's important for us to recognize what how the Hispanics see this community. And it may down the line help us to get more responses from them in future if they feel like they're being listened to. So I think it's very valuable and very important to separate these on most of these points.
I would add one last piece on that. I appreciate your perspective on that, Councillor, is too that if you merge them in a summary at the end, which we didn't do, you know, like, okay, just take all three activities, online, in-person English, Spanish form, merge them all together, you end up with the same direction for the most part. what you saw here was support English speaking and a certain issue, like, is this consistent with the overall goals of the project? And then even stronger support from the Spanish language portion of our community. Merge them together, you're still going down the same path. What you didn't see in here was big divergences. And so I think that's an important takeaway as well.
Well, I am pleased that they broke it out. It gives me a better view of the Hispanic community here, which we rely on so heavily. So that's my 2 cents worth. 3 cents worth.
40 cents.
Thank you, Councilor.
Well, in these times of tariffs, it's probably 4 cents.
I'm going to stop the share here and kind of...
I think our Medicaid will cover it there.
Oh.
Just talk about the couplet.
No, not heavily.
He mentioned couplet in a passing phrase, but I didn't see anything written
about it. It's in the summary. There's some language about that. I'm bringing. Okay, so here's the memo. This is the work that HerbsWorks been doing, and it does hinge on the transportation solution we selected, and it's very graphic. It's a form-based code. And they break it down in component pieces. And you have a form-based approach and why they believe that's appropriate, the regulating plan, some discussion about the public realm, your development and design standards, and references. So this would, as noted, you can kind of see on them off the screen here, but this would be an overlay zone if you want to think of it that way, where the design district would apply. It would fit into our existing chapter for design review districts, which currently has one design review district, the Knight Beach District. There would be if this is adopted in some form, we would then have a Knight Beach District, and then we would have the City Center District.
Roughly would be the extent of that district.
Of the City Center one?
Yeah.
That would include the geographic boundaries of the planning area, which would actually go from...
But the question is Highway 20 included? Because most 20
and 101, yes. And 101 would be, I believe, it would go all the way to the bridge, because it's going to talk about... There'll be some language dealing with the hospital area as well, which we haven't spent a lot of time talking about. But it's part of the boundary of this and kind of how that area is likely to build out and develop out. But yeah, US 20 would be part of this. Can get this to move. So this is very graphic. So that's your boundary, to your point, Bob. That's what the district would look like, unless we elect to shrink it down or modify it somehow. But that's the concept. And then you have, over here, you have illustration of the highway system. So you got your US 20 here, along with the areas that are impacted in gray. And then you've got it coming through, and this shows the couplet solution. The bars here that you see are mandatory retail, the pink lines here. These would reflect areas where your first floor would have a mandatory kind of retail orientation or commercial orientation. And we can work through what that gets to be.
But getting back to the point that was made in the surveys, most people think the nature of those two areas should be different. That they should not have a common design plan. And yet you're presenting this as it's going to apply to the entire design, to the entire study area.
Let me clarify this, Bob. It's both 20 and 101 will be within the design district, but the standards in this commercial core area, for example, within that district are going to be different than the ones for 20.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not that 20 doesn't have design. There's still going to be a form-based code for 20. We're trying to get quite a bit more housing, frankly, in once you get back from those businesses that face 20. So once you start to get closer to the high school, for example, there are some form-based concepts to try to get some more housing in there, recognizing we're going to be routing a multi-use path on First. And so what that streetscape might look like a little bit is going to be different.
Okay, than just 101. Yeah, that was my point.
Yeah.
Right, the people were saying it should be different, so we need to build that in.
And you'll want to look at that carefully as we go through this. Like I said, when we get to the schedule, this is just an orientation of the materials. We're going to be bringing Jim Hankey in at an upcoming work session to go through it in greater detail on the 27th of May. And that's really going to be your opportunity to really throw some darts at this if you see things that are you don't like. So I wanted to make sure that you weren't walking into the 27th without any context and feeling like you have to, you know, provide whatever comment you're going to provide in a work session at that point in time. I wanted to give you a chance to orient to the materials, ask me some questions, which if I can't answer, I'm happy to follow up with them or you guys on. So that you're better prepared for the 27th. All right, so I'm going to move this forward a little bit. I'm not going to spend too much time, but does everybody here kind of get what a form-based code is versus what we typically have? It's much more graphic-driven, and it's driving at making sure certain types of construction have certain architectural features. And they're not features that necessarily have to match, but they do get at, you know, what's the visual appearance, where's the building located relative to, say, a sidewalk, that kind of thing. It has kind of two different sets you'll see as we go through this of standards. You're going to have a public realm set of standards, and you're going to have standards that apply to private property. We have an opportunity to take a look at some things that we haven't normally looked at and spent time on. Believe it or not, the city does have some standards that allow awnings to get extended in a public right-of-way. They haven't been looked at in a long time. They're getting looked at as part of this process. That's the kind of public realm standard that would come to play. This improvement on 101, for example, and 9th would allow us to put in sidewalks that are wider than sidewalks we have in most anywhere else in Newport. That's going to allow some opportunities that need to be looked at. Sidewalk seating, for example, how might that work? You know, we have a little bit of that on the Bayfront, for example, a little bit in City Center now, but it's very constrained. That'll create additional opportunities for that kind of thing. Your general standards, you know, again, for your private properties are going to get at form of development. There are some use components that are in here as well. Additional allowances for residential and in commercial areas you're going to want to take a look at. You'll see the street cross sections are included in here. Bob, again, to your point, U.S. Highway 20 Gateway Zone has its own kind of distinct component or sub area within the design overlay versus the city kind of traditional downtown area versus the gateway zone down by the hospital. So those are the three kind of sub areas that would fall within the design overlay. Different expectations in terms of your street cross sections, each of those three areas, you know, frontage types, all of that. You guys realize it was like 45 meg. It takes forever to, if any of you guys tried to print that off, ask Sherry how hard it is. I'm going to try to keep moving this along. So see a graphic in here that talks about where urban frontage is required or retail ready frontage is required, where landscaping frontage is required, where general standards apply. these are the illustrations that you'll see coming through here. Moving into chapter 4, when you get into the public realm, you'll see some areas where they, HerbWorks believes, in the areas highlighted, we need to hold to a fixed dimension and not be flexible there, which means, you know, we have to have that with a redevelopment. We have to have a 8-foot pedestrian corridor, for example, there on 101, or travel lanes have to be at 11 feet. So certain standards are just saying, you know, are not standards that should be flexed, and they're highlighting those. So when you read through these materials and you see the fixed dimension and a highlight next to fixed dimension, that's what they're saying. They're saying in these locations where it's highlighted, we believe as a design professionals, that being HerbWorks, that those need to be held to.
Well, those are minimums, or are they actually fixed?
They're saying keep them fixed so you have a uniform. I think that's a fair question to pose to them as to, you know, whether or not larger is fine. But I think to some degree they're looking for some consistency too within the design corridor. Cross-section, they talk about the couplet for the downtown, the Highway 20 treatment.
Wait, go back.
Yep.
On the street cross-section?
Yes.
On the 9th Street, the second diagram on that page.
Northbound, yes.
Yeah. Looks like parking on both sides and two lanes. I didn't think that was in the plan.
I'll follow up with them on it. I don't agree with you. I don't believe we can hold that. We don't have the right of way for that.
Okay, thank you.
There was supposed to be a protected bike lane there, but not parking on both sides on the north. It was only on the south.
I have a question about page, I don't know, street crossing section. And I could not understand what they were describing. It says Highway 20, south of the couplet.
Oh, yeah,
Highway 20 runs south of the couplet.
Major reconstruction.
It would. It completely flummoxed me.
Where is that one, Jim?
It's
this page.
Yeah. It's page 106, big page 106, little page 22.
Oh, it is little page 22. Thank you, Bob.
Mm-hmm. I picked up on that, too.
Yeah,
that makes no sense.
I spent far too much time wondering.
That label. That's supposed to be just a Highway 20 cross-section.
And get 5 lanes on Highway 20? That's what's in the diagram.
Not the existing conditions.
Well, even on the new one, we aren't going to get 5 lanes.
It says it's showing existing conditions. We got the wrong city.
Yeah, well, Highway 20 is a long road. Somewhere.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Anyways. I'll talk to them about it. They were swapping out a cross-section because the cross-section that they had in there was inappropriate. They were swapping it out, and that's the new one that they stuck in, and it's wrong.
Okay.
I just got this.
Okay, that's fine.
For the
minute
stuff.
Doesn't take much to baffle me some days.
I'll talk to Marcy about it.
Yes.
The form.
I think coming west.
Bradley, is there a question for Derek?
We were talking about the Philomath couple and that.
The so you have some examples of what a commercial alley would be, residential alley. The development design standards, this is starting to extend onto the private property. So it's C1 and C3, you start to see where the different focal points are on the building envelope. That's what the little dots are there, A, B, C, D, E. Speaks to minimum lot size. These are all existing standards typically. It does have recommendations for permitting townhouses in the commercial zones in certain areas. This would not be on, for example, those areas where retail is required. You can't do a townhouse in those areas. So that'd be more like a block off of 101 and 20, if you want to think of it that way. Block or two off of those, off the highways, that's where this would come into play within your C1, C3, and public zones.
Some of these are stated as maximum, some minimum, and some don't say.
Maximum. Well, you have maximum, minimum, and then you have your percentage limitations. These are all standards we currently have. Otherwise, the highlighted ones are really the most relevant here. I mean, our minimum lot size in these commercial zones and public zones is already 5,000 square feet. We don't have setbacks that apply.
Right, but the lot coverage, for example.
That's a percentage. That means 85 to 90% of the lot can be covered with building or impervious surface.
Can be or must not exceed that or can
yeah,
be
no,
less?
Yeah, no, it's like, yeah, the lot coverage percentage would be a maximum.
Okay.
It doesn't say that, but that's what it is.
Okay. Probably should say that.
Commercial can be 50 feet high.
Yep. That's what it is now.
Yeah, okay.
We didn't really want to go above that. There was some discussion about that, and we explained to them it gets at a fire safety issue and our firefighters' capacity to respond to anything above that. And the types of building code changes you start to get into when you go over 50 feet in height in terms of what the internal construction and how the fire would be fought for upper stories.
Fire right there, you got a pretty good-sized ladder truck.
Well, that's what the 50-foot will accommodate. You go beyond that, then that ladder truck can't get you all the way up. And so now you're talking about some sort of interior way of fighting, going up elevators, having a fire control room in the building. We had to do that with the vertical evacuation. I think we had that conversation when Hatfield was thinking about doing that project and what would be involved to do vertical evacuation over 50 feet in height. Because of the fire response aspect of it. There's quite a bit of text under the general standards that you'll want to take a moment to read through and digest. It talks about the purpose, of the design standards. And this kind of fits the existing structure of our code to a point. Applicability. This gets at what design features apply to what types of development. So articulation criteria versus main entrance criteria. And when you see those, what they're talking about, you'll have there's graphics built into this about windows and transition space and what's being expected. So somebody who's looking to do a project can visually see, okay, this is what they're looking to accomplish. And so a lot of these notes go back up to the table. So I'd just encourage you to take a moment to review that. But that's how that all relates to applicable to what types of dwellings facing a street, dwellings in a cluster or grouping, applicable only for new buildings. You'll want to spend some time on those design standards. Make sure you're comfortable with those.
part of the table, of course, is covered up here. So.
Yeah, I'm not showing it all because it gets... Again, I can back it back down, Bob. Again, it's...
Yeah, I mean, the word draft is covering up...
Covering the transitional space, so right. I'll have them fix that. That may have gotten picked up when it was PDF'd.
And is it implied here that mixed-use buildings don't have any of these standards? They just haven't filled them in yet, or what?
I don't know that that's the case. I'd have to look at each of the items, Bob. So, but I'll talk to him about getting that table, section 14.3. I'm just writing a note down. Okay. You'll want to work through, I'm not going through all of the standards right now, but the standards are listed in some detail here. Windows for, you know, articulation, as I said, each of those categories that were in the table get broken down into greater detail as you move down below.
And just to clarify, are these existing standards, or these are what they're proposing for this to sign?
This is all proposed, yes. No, this is new. Okay. All of this would be new. Okay. We don't have any of this in place in this area right now.
Okay.
No, good question. So, applicable by building type. Right. Applicable only for new buildings would include mixed use, Bob. So, 6.
Okay, yeah, but...
And 5.
Yeah, but there isn't any 6 on the table.
So. 5 and 6. Well, maybe they're who knows? Maybe they're underneath the draft.
Okay, that's going to take serious looking at.
Right.
And is that all the building types that that would be appropriate here?
I mean, I don't know.
Do you distinguish between condominiums and townhouses?
Must be.
Well, there is a distinction between the two.
Would that distinction make a difference here, or should that be townhouses?
Probably not in the visual appearance.
Hmm?
That's an ownership issue,
right.
More
no,
than the
I know
visual
that
appearance.
Yeah, what the difference is, but would these apply to condos? Because it doesn't say that here.
Okay. We are getting there. You'll have some parking considerations you want to take a look at. And then moving into the next area here, you get to, this is where you start to see some of the visual. Frontage types and what we're looking for in these different frontage types. Some photo examples of what those different frontage types look like. Again, helping the person who's doing the development have a better sense of what we're trying to accomplish with a graphic representation. Urban frontage store shop front gives you a good sense of what folks are looking for. Again, we had a lot of support for the PED scale signage, which you see in the photo images here. That's your more PED scale signage versus the rooftop mounted stuff. More of the different, these are all urban frontage, different types. So residential, porch, stoop, terrace. Each of them is trying to give you a sense of, give a developer a sense of how the building should be designed to interface with the public space. So you want to take a look at each of the frontage types, When the consultant's here on the 27th of May, I mean, that's an area you could certainly, you know, poke at if you have any concerns with any of the design approaches, whether or not they're accomplishing what they're stating they're accomplishing or consistent with the community feedback and been hearing. So this is the parking, again, gets at what are we looking for in terms of parking, landscaping, edges to screen lights, that kind of thing. Then the end of the document gets into kind of their references, which gets at various things, such as the ODOT urban blueprint, which is the one, as you guys know, when we were doing the TSP, that's the blueprint we have to work within for 20 and 101 in terms of what is or isn't acceptable to the state. That's all. They have other various reference materials. So, land uses. The highlights get at issues you want to take a look at, base zones. So they're just kind of covering, well, just kind of the background reference material. So, yeah, look for this to come in a more, it'll be in a more refined, I'll pass along the comments I've received from you guys, and they need to fix those. Cross sections are really bad. They need to get cleaned up. They're undoubtedly going to get some feedback from the CAC as well, you know, that they may want to work into the material. So what you get on the 27th is not going to look drastically different, but you'll probably notice a few changes here and there. And if you have any specific questions as you move through these materials and you want to, feel free to send me a note just individually, and I'll make sure it gets to the consultants. If you have any questions as you work through these materials and you reflect on this stuff, that you want to make sure you have an answer for before the upcoming work session. So I'll stop the share on that and bring up the schedule, if that works for you.
Eric, quick question.
Yeah, John.
There's a lot to go through on the 27th. I'm wondering if we can have like an earlier start to the work session.
Hey, good question.
Or in some way accommodate maybe an hour and a half long.
Yeah.
There's a lot there.
Yeah, that's a good thought. We probably could do that. Sherry, I think we could probably do we should be able to do a 5 o'clock maybe. I'll talk to the consultant.
Yeah, I think that would help. I'm going to have a lot of questions.
Yeah, 5 or 5:30, at least give you a full hour and a half.
Do you have a
awesome
plan for the regular session on the 22nd?
At this point, it would be relatively light, and I think it's
start at 6 and have a work session into some of the regular session
time. If that works for you guys,
we could take a break at 7, this little final order.
Right, and then reconvene. We could do it that way too.
And then we wouldn't.
So that's the other way, John. We could do it is just we could just stretch the work session, stick with our 6 p.m. start time. All right, I'm going to bring up that schedule. Just one page.
Okay. Anything else on the? Oh, well, you're not done with this schedule.
Correct. So this is what we have. It's all subject to potential change, but we had to kind of, this is the adoption phase of the project that as we've kind of mapped it out at this point. And so final citizen advisory committee meetings coming up on the 16th. They'll provide a recommendation on components of the draft. That recommendation is likely going to be, would be framed in a manner that they recognize further refinements would happen through the legislative process. This is it's going in the general appropriate direction, not a, we think everything down to the T is perfect right now. This is a work session I was talking about for you guys, review the components on the 27th. Council will have a work session on the 2nd of June, so they get that as well. Consultants will then, coming out of there, revise the document, update it, and submit what would be framed as a draft city center revitalization plan that's ready for the adoption process. You would then hold another work session on the 23rd, assuming you're comfortable that it's complete enough to start the legislative process. You would do that in your regular session meeting on the 23rd. You would then have a hearing scheduled out, because remember, we got to do the 35-day notice. You'd have a hearing scheduled out July 28th. We could certainly hold a work session in between the two if there was some information you wanted to talk about before the hearing. So that's one more work session option. I just didn't put it in the schedule. Council, assuming once the Planning Commission acts, and you guys know, you guys are the recommending body, so it's be a recommendation to do something at the council level. The council then would hold a work session in August, with adoption hearing being held either on the 18th of August or the 2nd of September. We're coming after Labor Day. The TGM grant that this is associated with expires on the 11th of September. That can be extended if we had to, so don't consider that something that's too ironclad, but we want to continue to move this process along as timely as
what,
we can.
What is that exactly?
The TGM? That's I remember, half the funding for this, a little over half of the funding for this project came from the state.
Right.
It's a form of a transportation growth management grant, TGM. And that has a deadline. The grant agreement expires. And we're supposed to have acted before it expires.
Oh, okay.
So we're, you know.
Oh,
we,
I see. All right. So I thought it was a date when we had to agree to something. I read that wrong. Okay.
Question on outreach, Derek.
Yes.
In the report, it noted there were 83 email contacts, mostly businesses in the Civic Center area. Would we use that? I would think valuable database and send invites when there's public comment desired at these stages to be sure we're talking to the folks right now most impacted?
For the hearings, absolutely. As we move forward, we're going to want to make sure that we are providing notice to everybody who is asked to stay informed when there's any opportunity for them to provide public comment on this topic. And so we will make sure that as the hearings come up, that they'll have an opportunity to attend and to participate in the hearings, either with written comment in advance or in person or via video conference.
We do not plan to have any public comment at the work sessions?
That's not how we approach it. We need to use the work sessions to give you time to be able to provide feedback on the drafts. That doesn't mean people can't attend and listen.
Anything you want to say on the work program now, Derek?
Just updated it based on kind of where we're at. We do expect, I'll mention a couple things. We do expect to have a conditional use application coming in anytime from Toyota of Newport. They'll be amending their prior conditional use permit. They're going with a different store concept, so that I do expect to see. And we'll begin to fill in some of the stuff we're talking about here the next time I do a longer works program, because I'm going to need to do a new one here pretty soon that kind of picks up the balance of June, July, August, those time frames. Okay. Still, by the way, I would mention too, things are moving well on that. You know, you'll have a hearing coming up before too much longer on the geohazard stuff. So I've been having some pretty good discussions with Oregon Park and Rec. I had a good discussion with DLCD. I'm going to be setting up meetings with some of the geotechnical engineering firms that we do work with to get their insights on whether or not they'd be comfortable doing geohazard reporting.
Hear back from any of the licensing?
I gave you what I had from the state, the geologist board. I did get a wishy-washy legalese response back from the engineering licensing folks. I'm debating whether or not to reach out to him again, because I think I got even better information from DLCD, because they had done similar outreach and provided me the responses they got. Okay. And I think that might be actually more useful, given how they responded to that state agency.
And I stopped working on that code thing, whatever you call it, automating the municipal code.
Oh, Muni code?
Yeah, we're gonna get an updated version, right?
Correct. Yeah, Nina, our city manager, agreed that we need to get them to update that and build in those 10 missing ordinances and get us another draft before anything goes live.
All right, we'll close the work session. And Sherry, when